Suriname in defense of forests.
The indigenous people of Suriname amount to 20,344 individuals, about 3.8% of the country's population. The four most populated indigenous towns of Suriname are Kalinia and Locono, known as the Lowland Communities, and Trio, Wayano, and some other Amazonians who live in the south and are known as the Highland People. During the time of the Dutch colony in the 17th century, the Native American local population of the area retreated back into the Amazon basin. 54,000 African slaves were sold in Paramaribo, the capital of Suriname, to work on sugarcane plantation in inhumane conditions, which caused many of them to flee into the forest. Suriname is one of the few countries in South America that has not yet ratified the Convention 169 of the International Labour Organization concerning the indigenous and tribal peoples. The country's legislation does not yet recognize indigenous communities, nor are there laws about their land ownership. Given the great profitability in natural resources exploitation and the biodiversity of the territory, this lack of a proper set of laws poses a direct threat to the existence of Native Americans of the region. 80% of Suriname is made up of primary tropical forests. The government has granted 40% of the lands to the fishing industry and the extraction and export of oil, bauxite, gold and water.
If they're talking about development, it should benefit the group, you know, who lives in the interior. As I said, you can't talk about development if I'm not in the process. If I'm not a part, you know, of the process, if I'm not part of the management. I have to give you my own perspective, give you my experience, because it will affect and has impact on my life. So it's not that we are against, but we want to be a part and we want to share benefits of all those projects.
In the district of Guanica, the community of Pikinpoika is subject to a double threat. The advances of ecotourism, which led to the decision of constructing a highway through the village, and an agricultural project that involves deforestation. Thanks to the strong protests of the village chief, the highway construction has been stopped, but the agricultural project is still moving forward, and in the absence of a protective legislation for the indigenous people of Suriname, the local community is left without legal options to defend the territory. For years, the state of Suriname granted property deeds to non-indigenous individuals, as well as licenses to mining companies, permitting them to operate in the region without consulting with the indigenous community and without obtaining their consent. In the 60s, the American aluminum company Alcoa built a hydroelectric power plant on the Suriname River to supply power to its subsidiary, Suralco. In order to complete the project, Alcoa flooded 50,000 kilometers of forest, which included 43 villages of the Samaka community. As a result, 6,000 people were displaced and had to be relocated in migratory camps. Most of the indigenous people are deprived of electricity to this date.
It benefits only the multinationals because I think more than 80% of all this energy is going to the multinationals like Alcoa, Suralco, and now we have IAM Gold. So I think it's not benefits the local people, nor the people who were displaced at that period.
My name is Guillermo Walker. I'm from Coffee Camp. About the history of Coffee Camp, and Coffee Camp was before in the lake they call Van Blommesteyn's Two Meer. There was before, and they moved us because of the water. I don't know what it was, but they moved us from there and put us in Coffee Camp. Now the village name is New Coffee Camp, because we are removed. It was like someone shoot you, you know? They won't give you life. I mean, it's not nice, because our maroon people have a tradition. When you live here, people who die here, you want to stay there and live with your people until the end of time. You don't want to move and go and live somewhere else. Then it'd be like you lost your, your immune.
Your heritage?
Yeah. So we want to live there with the people together and die with them together. That's it.
The increase in the price of gold makes Suriname a major exporter of this mineral, but extracting and processing gold leads to deforestation and the pollution of water. Therefore, the forests disappear and the natives are left without water. In small-scale or informal mining, mercury is used to process gold, and in large-scale mining, the companies use cyanide nitrate. The remains of this illegal substance stay in the water, polluting it for years.
Basically, you have two levels of mining. One is the large-scale mining done by incorporated companies, many of them multinationals. They tend to be more mechanized, have more advanced technology, better efficiencies, it will often use a cyanide process.
Every year, 60 tons of mercury are discharged into Suriname's rivers because of informal mining. In the community of Apatina, blood tests were run and hair samples were taken to determine the level of mercury in the inhabitants' bodies. According to the results of the analysis, 109 members of Apatina tribe showed great contamination in blood due to the ingestion of mercury. The state of Suriname exploited three natural reserves within the territories of Kalania and Locono, which belong to the indigenous people of the Lower Marowijne, the most important estuary in the region. In 2015, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights voted in favor of the Kalania and Locono people, demanding the state of Suriname to protect their rights by recognizing the collective legal personality of both communities as well as their collective property ownership rights.
I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Sarah Augustine. I'm the co-director of the Suriname Indigenous Health Fund. Our next point is on the health effects of mercury contamination associated with dumping mine waste. mercury bioaccumulates in fish, which is the primary source of protein. We've demonstrated in the risk assessment that we've submitted to the commission, which was published in 2012. This research demonstrates the risk that is imposed on the community of Apatina as a result from having a contaminated food supply. We demonstrated neurological impact, including a surge in birth defects, sickness, disability, and premature death in our health assessment, which we've also submitted to the commission. That was routed for peer review in 2013. We've noted that bacteria and E. coli is in the water from high concentrations of itinerant gold miners, and those gold miners are operating with inadequate sanitation, so they're polluting the sole water supply for the Wayana people. This is particularly important for children under age 5 who are impacted by diarrhea and dehydration. The impact of mercury is also specifically harsh on the youngest and most vulnerable population. Women who are pregnant are most severely impacted by mercury intoxication, as well as children under 5, those people whose nervous systems are still developing. We have also demonstrated in our health assessments that all individuals of all ages, are actually impacted by mercury contamination from this waste, inadequate dumping of toxic waste. We understand from the testimony of our in-country partners that concession owners willingly and knowingly support small-scale gold mining. This is important to note because often in the news you will hear that these are illegal miners that come into Suriname lands and there's no way to control that. But actually we are told that those people who control concessions in the interior are benefiting from that gold mining and are in partnership with these itinerant miners who come in and do this alluvial gold mining. Would like to ask the commission to encourage the state to regulate the gold mining industry and prohibit mercury pollution.
Despite the court's ruling, land concessions in Suriname continue. Another example is the planned expansion of Johan Adolf Pengel International Airport. The project involves issuing a land title which covers the traditional territory of at least 2 indigenous tribes, the Witsanti and Hollands Camp. 2 of the Witsanti leaders were brutally arrested after they prevented airport workers from taking technical measures necessary for the expansion in their village. After the arrest, the villagers erupted in protest and the residents of the area blocked the road to the airport, which resulted in the release of the leaders. The subsequent dialogue with the government has not yet produced any solution. In a previous ruling on the Saramaca case in 2007, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights decided that the states are obliged not only to consult with the indigenous communities according to their customs and traditions, but also to obtain their free, prior, and informed consent with regards to development or investment projects that may affect their territory. It was also established that the governments must reasonably share the benefits of such projects with the Saramaca people. Due to the constant repetition of violations against the rights of native people of Suriname, the court also ruled similar measures to be taken for all the indigenous tribes of the country. It also ordered the state to repair the serious damages caused by the bauxite extraction carried out by the Alcoa and BHP Billiton subsidiaries.
There should be social studies, you know, what the effects and the impacts of those projects. Also, what will they gain out of those projects? If they're going to get benefits, and what is the benefits, because not only promises, but they have to be sure that it will give them work, you know, it will give them school, it will give them good health care. So we want to be a part of all those activities that the government and other third parties are planning to do and to have in our territory, in our communities, that will affect and that will have impact on our lives.
Following the decision of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, there is hope that Suriname would adopt its own legislation in defense of the territories and other rights of indigenous people, especially now when the interest in biodiverse territories and resources such as bauxite, gold, water, and forests is growing.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood, and we are focusing on the first and the second sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains about the circumstances in which the messengers of God, the prophets of God, came to communities. And one of those important issues that was discussed is that the communities at that time were in that state of confusion, of course, as Imam Ali alayhi salam mentioned, and the messengers came to remove that confusion and bring them back in the path whereby they can clearly see the direction. And we said that the people, unfortunately, they suffered from material issues, and mostly from spiritual issues, like, of course, the issue of misguidance, that people didn't have a right, you can say, perspective. They didn't have that right direction. They didn't have the proper aims and objectives of a Muslim society, of a proper society. And we notice that when a society doesn't have aim, and their aims are just the material, that you don't know that society is not going to progress. However complicated their machinery becomes, however powerful the technology is, everything, as long as there is nothing beyond this material, you can say, satisfaction, then definitely a man, definitely humankind, will feel in a state of loss. And this is what we discussed in the previous session, and inshallah today we shall discuss this further.
¶¶
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we notice that because mankind does not have a defined, you can say, aim, doesn't have a defined, goal in life, and their goal is just the material, not, and not beyond that, they unfortunately then fall prey to various different types of enemies who completely then destroy them and derail them from the right track. And that's what Imam Ali al-Islam mentioned previously, that because the shaitan is being followed and he is being obeyed, and Allah is being disobeyed by the people, and they do not want to follow his direction, at the end of the day they will be trampled by the evil people, they will be destroyed by the societies that want to control them and want to overwhelm them. The problem also comes here is that sometimes when these societies don't have a defined aim, an objective, then what happens is that they start to have material aims. They start to look for material progress. And you saw that, you notice that then people just become consumers, and they, even if they produce, it is for consumption. And if they consume, it is for production. And they produce, it's for consumption. And this wretched cycle continues. And then what happens is that when a group of people have this materialistic ideology, and when they fall into this completely, then they continue, and because of that continuation, they become oppressors, because you cannot continuously earn wealth and be wealthy without having oppressed others, without having taken other people's rights. If you notice, Imam Ali alayhi salam says in one of the narrations, مَا رَأَيْتُ نِعْمَةً موفورة إلا وفي جانبها حق مضيع. I have never seen great amount of blessings, great amount of wealth in a place, except that next to it there is a right which has been disregarded. That means it is when these rights of the people, rights in the society, rights of communities are not regarded, then that people become filthy rich, unnecessarily rich, and they start to spend without thinking. And this is one of the issues that societies face. This is one of those plagues that the societies face that needs to be removed, that needs to be extracted, that needs to be, surgically removed, so that, the society can remain in a good direction.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we mentioned that when societies do not have a defined purpose and goal, they do not have a defined, dream to achieve, if they don't have anything to look forward to, which is beyond the material, then the material things will start to substitute, because at the end of the day, a human being needs aims and objectives in life. And if you look at the world of today, for instance, one of the aims that was thought, was made as a thought, that was propagated by the people of the world, was the American dream. That the whole world needs to focus on that. People need to work hard, needs to do struggle to achieve the American dream. What is the American dream? Is that lifestyle, that rich lifestyle, that lavish lifestyle where you've enjoyment and everything that America has shown to the world. Now, question. Once I achieve that dream, let's say, if it is achievable, which is not, we have seen today, it's not achievable in the sense that they were propagating, but let's say it was achievable, then what? So a person then realizes that, oh no, I'm aiming for something that is completely vague, completely futile. Because after that, what do I do? What is that thing that I need to look forward to after that? See, nothing is there. And that is when you see that a civilization begins to reach its end. When you see that a civilization has exhausted all its resources and all its abilities and all its efforts to achieve that aim with which they want to achieve. And let's say a few people also reach that aim. And many people don't reach that aim. But when a community in a country or a society or a nation struggles to achieve it and finally feels it has achieved it or realizes that it cannot achieve it, that is a time when that society starts to fall, to break apart, to get destroyed. And that is why when we see that some people say that now is a time for the people of the world to think beyond that material frame, they are right. Because if we don't take that step, then according to Imam Ali and the statements of Nahjul Balagha, we will get completely destroyed and we will not be able to achieve our purpose as human beings. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen, but there are barriers. And one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic. We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen, but there are barriers. And one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. And that's one thing that I want all of myself especially to understand, that the deen is a deen of harakat and a deen of movement. Not a deen to be complacent or to be stationary or to be static. No, you got to keep moving. You got to make sure your yesterday is a little bit worse than your today. And your tomorrow a little bit better than your today. The deen does not tell you just be okay and have spiritual complacency. A lot of us now stop and convince ourselves the amount that I do is not only enough, it's good enough. I don't see myself anywhere else but in heaven, inshallah. That's how good I think I am. Yeah. They have their manzil, their palaces already laid out in the hereafter. 18, 19-year-olds telling me I don't see God punishing me in the hereafter, Malana. Allah, himmat, mashallah. Give me that yaqeen. And it's good to have that sort of husnizan for Allah subhanahu. That's great to have that great opinion of him, but not to the point where you think, okay, I'm good now. I'm good. Because now what we do is, people like me, we look for ways to, what? To maximize my good and minimize my evil. And the deen says, do it opposite. The way that you hide your sins, hide your good deeds. Very hard to do. Hide your sins, right? We hide our faults, we hide our blemishes, we hide our sins, even our physical blemishes. We do our best to kind of, you know, put a Band-Aid, right? Put something on our face to hide it, all that. God says, do the exact same thing when you do anything good. Let me take care of your respect. You don't need to take it into your hands. I'll make sure that more people know about it than if you handled your own good deeds. Just have yaqeen and certainty in me, that's it. Removing doubt is extremely important. Now, I want to present to you a couple of more verses, and then I want to get to a discussion on perfection, because it is a very relative discussion. Yaqeen, certainty, removing doubt is a very relative discussion, and we'll get to that in a moment. Before that, let me present to you, you know, all of you know me enough to know that I'm not a doom and gloom Mulana, right? I'm not the scary, squeeze the grave, whipping in the grave Mulana. I'm not. I try not to be, at least. I try to be a little bit hopeful, a little bit happy-go-lucky, a little bit, you know, the deen is positive, God is love. To a certain extent, of course, there is hisab kitab, there is justice, of course there is, absolutely. This verse, however, is very important. Surah Al-A'raf, verse number 179. Understand the context of this verse. Okay, Al-A'raf 179. Allah now describes those individuals that he uses as the base of the creation of the hellfire. Let me say it one more time. These are not the people who are the Ahl Jahannam. It's a different group. These are people that Allah looked at and said, because of them, I'm creating Jahannam. Oh, that's a different situation altogether. It's like, oh my God. وَلَقَدْ ذَرَعْنَا لِجَهَنَّمَا كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنْسِ. Very famous verse, but listen to it through the eyes of yaqeen and certainty. That from the majority of the men and the jinn who will be in the hellfire, they have three qualities. How many? How many? Thank you, thank you. لَهُمْ قُلُوبًا لَا يَفْقَهُونَ بِهَا. They had hearts. They didn't allow anything to penetrate inside that heart. Everything was surface level. Everything was fluffy. Everything was, okay, no, that's enough. You know, we'll keep the research and tahqiq and ijtihad for the ulama. I'm good where I am. وَلَهُمْ أَعْيُونٌ لَا يُبْصِرُونَ بِهَا. They have eyes, but they never saw anything. They looked everywhere, 20/20 vision. But they didn't have, you know, this basirat, this insight. لهم أذان لا يسمعون بها. They had ears. They never listened to anything. They heard a lot. Never listened to anything. أولئك كالأنعام. They're like cattle. Look at the example. They're like cattle. Just walking around. Nothing affects them. بل هم أضل أولئك هم الغافلون. In fact, they're worse than cattle. They are amongst the ghafileen, amongst those who are heedless. Now, interesting example of the cattle. I've given this example before. I just want you to understand what Allah is trying to tell us here. Okay? Why does He use cattle and cows and al-am? Why not ankabut? Or why not anything else? It's very, very interesting. Sometimes when you see certain animals, and you're driving your car and you're approaching the animal reacts. Birds fly away, the squirrel runs for its life, right? If you shoot, let's say, a gun, and nearby there's a deer, he'll pop his head up, you know, freeze for a second, and then take off. If you try to capture a bird, it'll go from branch to branch to branch to branch. But you do anything around a cow, he does nothing. He doesn't even move. You can drive past his head. You can shoot a gun. You can attempt to, you know, can moo in his ear. Even try tipping him over. He'll fall over. He'll stay where he is. He doesn't do anything. His surroundings are going crazy. Bombs going off, car horns, 90 kilometers an hour by his head. An inch away from hitting him, he's busy grazing, eating his grass. Allah says individuals who live their life with ears, eyes, and heart, and nothing goes through for them, they're just like that, living their life. Eat, sleep, work, repeat. Eat, sleep, work, repeat. لهم قلوبا لا يفقهون بها يفقهون فقه. The actual meaning of fiqh is فهم عميق, is a deep meaning. He wants that depth to enter your hearts. Oh, I've seen some of these kids today. Oh my God, man, their research in certain fields and their PhDs, oh, incredible. In this very city, a couple of months ago, I got a message about hijab in the Quran. This one sister, incredible. I was so impressed. And she wanted to just understand hijab from the Quranic lens. She doesn't, she couldn't see the fact that these verses that the ulama mention about hijab is clearly showing us how to wear hijab today. And she had a PDF document ready. She had a Word document ready. Did her research. Please, Sayyid, you know, can you look over this document and let me know where am I wrong? And it was such a beautiful document. So well organized. So professional. Such deep research. And it was just inspiring for someone like me. That depth we need, because that depth is mawjood in the deen. It's there in the deen. It's a matter of someone like you and I pulling it out. Don't settle. Don't simply say, okay, you know what, I'm good where I am. The last time I read about God was in my grade 9 class in Dinyat, in Madrasa. And now I'm in my 30s. The constantly refresh and refresh and refresh a lot of the ilm. I'm getting there in a little bit. You know, these stories we hear, right, in the middle of the war of Siffin, there's a man who turns to Amir al-Mu'mineen and says, can you tell me about, you know, qada and qadar of Allah? Talking about God, tawheed, in the middle of the war, arrows flying, now enemies approaching. He's asking about a question about tawheed. And another man says, ask him after the war. Let's let the battle go through. Look at the response of the first imam. He stops the second companion, says, no, this is precisely why we're in this war to begin with. For questions like this, the deen is very deep, has all of your answers, but you have to go through your respective way of getting your answers from your questions.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iwan's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Apar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, All industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roaster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of the legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports.
Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least 5 mines in Fars province. Esterlal Obade Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has 3 factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the research and development department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahale Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramicware, such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries. The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials, such as fire clay, meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market. Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports composed some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taking years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures, carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain